I'm going to now take it back to the mic over here.
Hello, my name is Gwenda Woodbury. I'm a parent in School District 43, which is Coquitlam School District. Myself and some other parents and trustees and QP members and teachers got together in the district a year ago, just after the last VCTF conference, and organized Consortium 43. We are a group of advocates for public education from all walks of life. So that's why I'm here today. But I want to speak from a more personal perspective. I'm also a parent on our school planning council at my children's elementary school. And when we were discussing earlier today about this assessment problem, the FSAs and whatnot, I have a very, I think, very pertinent observation. Our school planning council looked at all that FSA stuff for the grade 4 children, which is elementary school level, and said, we're comparing results of children from 1 year to the next. They assess in grade 4, so the grade 4 results from last year is being compared to the grade 4 results of this year. These are two different groups of children. So we took it upon ourselves to try to figure out a way to do something different that was more meaningful. So at our elementary school, Lord Baden-Powell Elementary, we started a pilot project last year of a cohort group. We started with the grade ones, a cohort group, all the grade one children in our school. Now, there will be some children who leave that cohort group, and we will have new children coming into the school, which will not be included in the cohort. But hopefully, over time, by the time these children graduate, well, from grade 5, finish at LBP, we will have assessed them at every year that they've been in the school. We do the standardized testing. We assess them according to the provincial standards. But what we're doing is we're gathering data on this group of children to compare it to itself. So when the children who are not performing well in grade 1 or grade 2, the teachers can look at that information and they can formulate projects and strategies to deal with those children or the needs in that particular group. And the next year we see if we've done any better. And the next year we see if we've done better. And by the time we have 5 years worth of information, we have something that's worthwhile. We're looking at how our school is improving learning in our population. We're not comparing to some other school who's got different financial assets than we do, or socioeconomic assets than we do. We're comparing how we're doing with our kids. And I think that seems to be a simple idea. What does the panel think? Good idea or not?
I mean, it makes all kinds of sense to me. We have to ask, what is the purpose behind this testing or other forms of assessment always? And I think it's great that it sounds like it's community control and you're, you know, making the assessments appropriate to the goals that you set for yourself. I guess my only worry is that I just think we should keep testing to a minimum. And so, I mean, what I would advocate actually for the FSAs, and I think some folks in the BCTF have advocated this as well, is not to do away with them, but to go to a sampling. We don't have to, for the purposes behind those tests, we don't need to test every single kid. We could do a sample or cross-section of testing to kind of, again, just minimize the amount of testing that every child has to go through by the time they get to grade 12.
Thank you. Please go back to this mic here now.
Deidre, when you were speaking about standardized testing and talking about using that to assess how well we're sampling or how well we're serving the needs of people, students living in poverty, or ESL students, or Aboriginal students, it came to me that as a teacher, I teach in a middle school in Souk, a small town on the island, and it came to me that teachers are being asked to do more and more with less and less. We have the students for 5 hours. We can't deal with what happens after school. We can't deal with the fact that many of those students are going home to no dinner. They're going home to not enough food, not enough warmth, not enough energy from their parents because their parents are absolutely exhausted. I think what we need to start looking at is the larger context. When we take our minimum wage and it goes from $8 to $6, and the government gets away with telling the lie that that's a training wage. It doesn't take 500 hours to learn how to flip a burger. When the government gets away with that, there's a problem. And some of the students that come to us have to live in families where their parents are earning $6 an hour. How do you pay rent on that? And what kind of a home do you have on that? How can we address that in the classroom? We can give lunch programs. We can bring money from home, like our own money, and buy food for breakfast. I mean, I know lots of teachers who do that. But we can't really deal with the despair that comes from living like that. The whole community has to work together. And the people we should be asking is the corporations. You are abusing our people. The corporations are. They are using them. And I think our government has a plan in place to create less well-educated people, less able to speak for themselves, and more willing to feel fear and entrapment, and more willing to work for $6 an hour. I think, too, that when we look at Bill 33 and Bill 35, which says that we no longer have to have children in school until they're 15 years of age, now at 12 years of age, they can be sent out to work, and all that needs to be there is a letter from their families. Well, if those families are in such desperate plights, that letter could well come, and those 12-year-olds could well leave my middle school and go to work. We need to be looking at the larger community. We need to stop saying, what can we do to totally solve this problem on our own? We need to demand of government that welfare not be cut, that that horrible law that was passed this fall be struck down, that corporations step up to the plate and put some money in, because all they do is take. I think minimum wage needs to go up to at least $15 an hour, and we need to figure out how we're going to fund that.
I think you stated it very well, and I completely agree with you. What's insidious about what seems to be a move toward more testing is that it punishes teachers and students at the same time that funding is being cut and the support and the resources that would allow, you know, students to learn is being constricted. Yes. And that's missing from the dominant media. We do have some alternative media out there, but the dominant media wants to ignore that story completely. So it's up to us to try to get that message out.
Well, and I think too that with ESL students, since 9/11, things have become worse and worse for other cultures coming into our country. It's becoming a siege mentality, and it's once again something that's driven by fear. And when I look at that and try to examine where that fear is coming from, it's not about terrorism. It's about economics. It's about maybe some people not being as rich as they would really like to be, and some people actually having to share so that all people can have enough to live with dignity. And I think, too, that with our First Nations people, we need to be inviting the elders to work with us instead of thinking that we have the answers. I don't think we have the answers. And I think we need to do a lot of inviting connection and inviting community and a lot less of blaming, a lot less of finger pointing.
Well, I'm quite sympathetic with the perspective that you're expressing, and I think that it's really not the fault of the corporations for being who they are and what they are. We have to assert ourselves through our democratic means to be a counterweight to them. It's a competitive process, and if we sit on our hands, or if we withdraw from the political process, if we don't mobilize ourselves to express ourselves to political leaders and in the media and so on, then we'll lose in this competitive process. We have vehicles for expressing ourselves, and conferences like this are one place where we crystallize those things. But it doesn't bother me that their nature is to be driven by greed. That's the marketplace that we've created, and on the economic side, it works to a certain extent. But public and civic-minded persons like ourselves have to use the vehicles that are available to us and not feel as though we've been neutralized or we have no voice and so on and so forth, or we're too busy or we're too comfortable to take part in the political process.
Thank you.
As side on that, and I guess we're straying a bit from the topic, but the BC Teachers Federation does deserve some significant credit for some work they undertook in the 90s. The corporations that you're talking about in Canada are largely owned by teacher pension funds. But unfortunately, by law, teachers are very restricted and have been very restricted from having any control over how those funds are used. And I know the BC Teachers Federation in the 1990s undertook a very strong campaign to take control of their pension funds so they could be used more responsibly and used to promote ethical and responsible behavior on part of the corporations that they own. And I think the BCTF does deserve some credit for that.
Great point.
Thank you. Okay.
I'm Kent Krieger, President of West Vancouver Teachers Association. I have two questions. First of all, welcome to all of British Columbia. And my question really relates to your arrival. And it is, it's a bit rhetorical, but have we seen a sufficiently loud and critical voice related to public policy and education from academics? I'm pleased that there are four of you from the universities here, but it seems to me that for the last decade or three decades of my time in BC, that the people at the universities have been conspicuously absent from public discourse. And I would hope that the voice we're seeing here in a fairly sympathetic setting would be amplified outside of that. So I wonder whether you can comment on the prospects of that. And the second question is, I guess, for Chris. When I worked, when the president of BCTF worked with Aboriginal educators and leaders, and it seems to me that there's a bit of a paradox or a contradiction in the Aboriginal community's view of standardized testing. And I think you expressed that, and I wish we could have a little more discussion about that. On the one hand, the testing, as you said, has given the evidence, the tangible evidence of the failure of public education and other public institutions to meet the needs of Aboriginal learners and to give them the opportunities that other citizens have. On the other hand, the very tests which reveal that, one could argue, further oppress Aboriginal learners. And this discussion has been going on for some years, and I'm just curious as to how we resolve that paradox.
First question, let me just say a word to. I can't comment on the British Columbia scene because I've just gotten up here, and since education is largely a provincial matter and I wasn't reading the media from British Columbia while I lived in California and so on, I can't say. But in the United States context, I think what you're saying is true. There's not nearly enough expression on the part of academics. It's for various reasons. Part of it's the nature of the media that doesn't want to entertain complex arguments or lengthy arguments. Part of it is the fact that academics become specialized and talk to one another in their specialized circles. And with my own faculty, the last couple of places I've worked, I took to finding development money to pay them to write for the op-ed page of the newspaper. Many would say there's nothing I can say in 700 words, but you know, I say there's plenty of other people every day in the paper that find a way to say powerful things in 700 words. So we work to try to have more of a profile in the media, and I think there is an important place for academics to speak in this way, and I think it can be done in a way that appeals to the general public.
Yeah, there is a lot of issue on both sides and the gray area in between around standardized testing and for in particular Aboriginal students. Indigenous students. I guess, you know, the answer would be, you know, when you ask what would be an alternative or what could people or communities do, the province has an Aboriginal education branch, and there they've been able to establish local education agreements, where, and those were for band schools in particular, where schools are situated, where band students are still, they're on the reserves, and these students do transfer back and forth up, you know, between publics and the band school. So there have been local education agreements that have been developed. The other one that's just recently come out is called an enhancement agreement. And this enhancement agreement is a document that is made between the community and which encompasses not just classroom teachers, administration, parents and students, and anyone outside of that realm who happen to be concerned about the Indigenous populations in their neighborhood in that area, that those are places to start. And I once heard an educator from Lorna Williams, who had said, who's the director for Aboriginal Education Branch, she had said that there are communities that if you're working on this and you're truly getting to a place of consensus and understanding and really making the effort to work on what it is that you value to be successful, and you can all come up with this in those communities, it would take a minimum of, you know, 15 hours, 25 hours. That it's not an easy process, because if you, as you know, we all have different competing agendas, and we all have our own cognitive dissonance about what we're going to do and what not we're going to settle for, and so it's really problematic. But I think that if the heart and the mind are willing to sit through what that's going to, in the time that that's going to take, and the energy that that will take, and the commitment to follow through and have some really concrete plans, then it can be done. And I think that that's an alternative to the standardized problems that come from doing that testing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.